Hello and welcome to the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast. I'm your host today, Matthew Davis, and I am joined with one of my good friends, Phil Dussault. If you do not know who that is, he can be followed on Twitter at Phil Dussault. That is spelled D-U-S-S-A-U-L-T 27. And I'm sure you already know if you're listening to this, he is champ from 2021, winning the main event overall and the auction championship overall. Phil, good morning and thank you for joining me.
Good morning. Thanks for having me, Matt.
Absolutely. You and I were able to meet in person yet again. So we've hung out in Vegas this year, in March, which was great to see your face in person since we've been kind of hanging out via text or Twitter, et cetera, and podcasting together here and there. And you and I met up with Zach Waxman and Steve Wehmer, and we had a ball at a Blue Jays game, and we went to the Hockey Hall of Fame. You even got to play goalie for a little bit, which was really cool and exciting for me to see, even though I was extremely hungover and had back spasms. It was a ball. And you and I stayed in Toronto an additional night as the other two left, and we got to go to another Blue Jays game. Some interesting things happened at that game where our section started to smell. This poor kid in front of us with his mom was at his first Blue Jays game ever, and he's so excited. He's wearing a Vladimir Guerrero jersey, and his mom brings him ice cream, and all of a sudden he starts to vomit all over the aisle seat.
Right on my leg.
Right on. There was some splashing going on Phil's leg. Some landed on the back of my ankle and foot, shoe. So it was a lot of fun, though. So it's good to see you again. We've been keeping in touch, just kind of talking about our baseball teams. And you and I put together some football teams together at the NFFC. So how are things going? I see that you're 12th currently right now in the overall for the main event, which is really impressive. The top 30 teams, they will also receive a bonus, right, in the overall prize pool, with first place taking down 200,000, and then it obviously trickles down to the 30th spot. So you're currently winning that league, and you're currently in the bonus in that one. So kudos to you. Is that the one that was in Las Vegas?
No, that one's my online one. And I was going back and forth with Jason Anthony for a while. Actually, for a while, he was ahead of me in the overall, and I just barely passed him in the league. Now I've got, I think, a 5-point league in the league, in the 5-point lead in the league. And he's still a little bit in the overall, but I think it's still really close, can go either way. And my good friend Griffin Benger is third in that league as well. So we kind of did it all online before we all became friends. Now we're kind of telling ourselves that we'll avoid each other next year in our main events.
Yeah, that seems to happen, purposefully with some of us as we begin to meet each other, right? It first starts on Twitter and then through the leagues, and then you finally meet up in Las Vegas. And then some of these meetups become friendships, like you and Griffin. You guys get to hang out with each other and watch ball sometimes. And it is interesting to see people, fantasy players, managers avoiding each other due to maybe sharing knowledge or information, or just being close enough to where you just don't want to play against each other. For me, for years, it's been Zach Betancourt. We've always obviously avoided each other because we've been sharing information. I'll be doing the same with you and a couple of other people, just because we do talk and kind of spread a little bit of information with each other. So it's good to have that component with you as well. I think that it really does help to sort of bounce things off one another. I know that you, Phil, Rob DiPietro, and Steve Wehmer have a team together, right? So that's kind of, you talk about things in that league, and then it kind of can create another focus or section for you to improve upon on your own team. So it's a really neat component in baseball. I'm not sure that football has it like that, since some of the savages are just in every single draft against each other. But yeah, it's a really a unique thing that I'm starting to see increase and get stronger in the NFBC.
Yeah, I can't imagine like 10 years from now, I'm going to have to avoid everyone, because it seems like I'm making new friends every year. I'm like, hey, this is a list of people I don't want to be in leagues with because of friendships and so on. So, yeah, I mean, like even Griffin, like I knew he lived in Montreal, and we kind of talked a little bit last week. We met on the FTN podcast, actually. I think it was last year. Yeah, end of last year. with Vlad.
It was for our the championship run, right? Yeah, weren't exactly. we live streaming yeah. the last day of games and stuff?
Yeah. Okay. So we talked a little bit there, and then we met in Vegas. It was funny. That's a funny story. I was sitting with Rob DiPietro at the we were doing a 750 OC, and James Tomney is drafting, telling his story, and I'm just looking straight, and I see this guy with a Blue Jays jersey, Blue Jays hat, and I just don't pay attention, even though the name tag is right there. And then, like, I don't know, round three or four, I kind of just like move my hand. I see Griffin's. I'm like, oh, and I look at him. Oh, you're Griffin. I like hadn't recognized him or anything. I'm like, look at this guy with all the Blue Jays gear. I hadn't connected the dots. So then after that, we went for lunch. Now we've hung out a couple of times in Montreal. I went to his place to watch some baseball. So it's just nice to have those friendships coming from this game where we kind of all compete against each other.
I know you and Steve are really close. And then when we got to Toronto, you and I took the train in together into the city. And it blew me away that you had never actually met Steve because he hadn't been able to make the Vegas trip over the last few years. And then you weren't able to make the trip the prior year. So that was pretty cool to see as well. Let's get into some goodness, some badness. Actually, you know, I'm looking at the doc right now that I sent to you, and I think it's just all bad stuff, actually.
Yeah, it's all negative. I see UCL, yeah. I see IL, I see broken hand.
So let's get into it. Shohei Ohtani, we know that he's dealing with the oblique, and it has sort of been stifling fantasy managers, myself included. I have him in the Vegas main event. And, you know, I was still starting him last week at one point, and then now after being scratched, obviously you just got to sit him right now, and it's really frustrating to see. And then when you tack on what happened with his elbow and what's additionally going to come in the future with potential surgery for the UCL, he won't be pitching next season. Now, most fantasy managers are already going in planning that Shohei Ohtani is my hitter. If I need him as a pitcher, it's sort of in a pinch slash dire straits situation. We do know, though, next year he is strictly going to be UT only. He was going, did he go second in your guys' early draft?
Yeah, he went second in that draft. The problem, though, is like Steve made that pick because it was such an early DC, and he wanted to have the option of hitter or pitcher, depending on, because you can draft three aces and one or two of them could get hurt. So it's just that flexibility. I think I don't want to speak for Steve, but I'm pretty sure he would have taken Strider if it was a regular DC that you're doing in February or March or whatever. He would have taken Strider, and I think Ohtani probably would have fell in that next group. There's probably next group of eight or nine guys that are really close to each other. So before the injury, I could have seen him go anywhere from 3 to 10, roughly.
How are we going to evaluate him in 2024? Let's say we show up to the main event in Las Vegas. We know what team he's playing on. It could be the Yankees, the Red Sox, the Cubs, the Dodgers, the Phillies, etc. Even the Royals can afford them. I hate when people are like, oh, well, the Royals can't afford them. It's the tight-ass billionaire owner that just doesn't want to spend the fucking money. So with Ohtani, does the landing spot, is that really going to impact his projection moving forward? I don't think so significantly. Obviously, if he lands on some of the Braves, Blue Jays, Dodgers, etc., that's great. That's where we want him to be. But where does he go at the end of the first round? Because of just he's a hitter. He's a UT only hitter. He does provide some speed. Obviously, he's elite in power. He's having the best batting average of his career. He's still a first rounder, right?
I mean, it depends what type of surgery he has. I mean, in 2018, he had Tommy John on October 1st and came back May 7th. Harper had it November 23rd and came back on May 2nd. That was one of the quickest returns from Tommy John, but we kind of saw Harper didn't have any power for the first couple of months. So maybe he came back too soon. So we're talking, but then maybe he does it. Maybe he opts for rest, or I think it's the Braves that might be a quicker return. I don't know. It's hard to guess. Harper went 218 this year at main events, but we kind of expected him to come back more around the All-Star break. Maybe second Tommy John takes a longer rehab because they have to be more careful. So many question marks.
Yeah.
If you're telling me in March that Ohtani is, say, starting to hit and he'll be back mid-May, then his price probably looks somewhat like Tatis did this year, which was, I think it was, what, mid-second?
You think that there's any shot that they, whatever team signs him, says, let's, is there a chance that they could opt out for surgery in that situation if he wanted to just be a hitter? Should he get it done regardless? Isn't that's kind of
probably has to get it done regardless. Right? Okay, I mean, if Harper had it done, I'm guessing he has to get it done regardless.
Corey Seager, who was it? Miguel Sano, I believe both of them also had it.
Yeah. But, I mean, the rehab is completely different though.
Right,
which
him.
Is but there's one thing I read from I mean they seemed like real doctors, not actual internet doctors, but quotes in an article from real doctors about how second Tommy John is a lot more tricky and the rehab is a lot more tricky, and hitting during that time could make it more complicated. So if he goes on a team like the Dodgers, which seem to be more careful, maybe they'll tell him, we'd rather you don't hit for most of the year. I don't know. I don't know if I'm doing a DC right now. I'm just not touching him. Even if it's round 10, I don't think I'm touching him. So,
yeah, that all those points do validate, like, no, not being anywhere near a first round pick. So it's unfortunate, yeah. But hopefully we'll get to see the unicorn, the alien, whatever the hell you want to call him. Shohei Ohtani. Hopefully we'll see him back sooner rather than later on the field for 2024. And hopefully it is on the Dodgers. Let's get into some other stuff here. Adbert Alzolay goes on the IL with forearm soreness. It was kind of weird because he was sort of pitching through it a little bit. And the clubhouse wasn't, David Ross wasn't really mentioning anything about it. And then all of a sudden, you see Julian Merriweather get the save over the weekend. And on Monday, there goes Alzolay onto the IL. We saw last night the Cubs get a save, and it went to Michael Fulmer, who just recently came off of the IL, and that was simply due because Julian Merriweather was unavailable after pitching back-to-backs on Saturday and Sunday. Merriweather gets the ninth. You and I think, both agree on that?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, if Fulmer wasn't there, I'd say Merriweather gets the ninth for sure, because he got the ninth on Sunday, and he actually went three straight Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So when you do that, it means you trust the guy. You want to put him in there. Fulmer wasn't available then though, because he just came off the IL. He got the save yesterday. So I could see them choosing to use Merriweather in a higher leverage spot and giving Fulmer the ninth. Especially because they don't seem to have that other guy that they can use. I mean, Leiter is fine, but like, they don't have that other guy they can bring in the seventh or the eighth to get four or five outs. Merriweather's been that guy. So I could see a scenario where he comes in the 7:38 against the top of the order and they say Fulmer for the ninth. But if I had to take a guess right now, I'd say Merriweather still gets most of the saves.
Merriweather over the last 30 days has the eighth highest K minus walk rate at 32.6%, the 11th highest swinging strike rate at 17.9%, and the third highest CSW rate at 40.3%. Before Fulmer did go on the IL, he was kind of like their lower slash higher leverage guy. When the like sixth inning, he was kind of coming in into those jams where the starting pitcher was kind of on the fritz. So it will be interesting to see. Be sure to read my update, the bullpen report that is available at FTN Fantasy. That'll be coming out on Saturday. And I'm already assuming that both of them will be mentioned, but I'll be digging a little bit deeper as I have more time to see the usage patterns for the Cubs. Another bummer here, Felix Bautista has a partial tear in his UCL, and Baltimore thinks that they could get him back by the end of the season slash playoffs. This kind of feels like we'll throw you out there, like, who was it? Masahiro Tanaka was pitching with the slight tear for a while, yeah, right? Yeah. With partial tear. Okay, so look, I don't think he has any fantasy relevance for the rest of the season. It just seems like they might. I would cut him if I have him, first and foremost. And then let's say he does pitch in the playoffs. When does the surgery come that extends it? And then what happens for next year? Is he out all of next year? Does he get the surgery? and then this year, who's the guy? I know it was Yennier Cano at first, and then we saw some Fuji love. Fuji did pitch the ninth last night again, but it was in a 5 or 6 run lead, so it wasn't a save opportunity. A lot to unravel with Baltimore. Starting first with Felix Bautista, the rest of the season outlook, and then what happens for our 2024 season.
Yeah, it's really sucks. He was pitching so well. He's just dominant. I think they're just kind of trying to see if there's anything they can do to let him pitch in the playoffs. Just they haven't been there in a while, and he's their guy. So if they can give him a shot, they've probably determined that they can't hurt him more. There's a chance he can pitch through it. I mean, they have to believe that. There can't be any long-term risks to doing that. Otherwise, I mean, there's no way they do that.
The Dodgers did it with Tony Gonsolin.
Yeah.
They said, just keep fucking eating innings, buddy, until you fucking really feel the burn.
Yeah. I wish him the best. Even if he magically pitches through the playoffs and they don't get surgery, someone will be staying away from next year. Just way too much risk. But hopefully he can pitch through, or they get surgery at the end of the year. He can come back late next year. For now, I mean, I'm pretty sure they have to go back to Cano. I know he gave up 3 runs on Saturday, I think it was. But I think the fact they went to Fujinami with the big lead yesterday meant they're kind of saving Cano for closer games, at least for the next stop. And then if he has another blow up, then Fujinami might be the guy.
That's a good point. Yeah, saving Cano with the 6-run lead and then using Fuji kind of as the, not the closer, but the just get it done job or role. That's what was going on last night. So I tend to agree with that as well. And I will have another update again, the bullpen report. Jose Siri, broken hand. Ouch. Easy cut. He could potentially come back at the end of the season or playoffs, but something like that. Any player right now that's even missing a week. In some leagues, I saw that Yoan Moncada had knee soreness on Sunday and wasn't in the lineup. And, you know, just not knowing what's going to come next. I'm cutting people like that right now just because I need live bodies. So I would cut him. Do you agree with that? Would you be cutting Siri with the broken hand with just 3 weeks to go? Yeah.
Yeah. I'm like you. I cut everyone. I'm probably even more dramatic than you are with cuts. But I did the Launch Angle pod with Jeff Zimmerman and Rob DiPietro, was it last week? And one of the points I said is that at this time of year, with probably half the teams not making fab moves in your league, there's a lot of good schedules like this with a lot of Pirates that you could pick up, a lot of Rockies that you could pick up. There might be, I want to say, about 50 hitters that are hard to replace for the last 2 to 3 weeks. Everyone else, since your bench is full, since you're keeping injured players and your starters, you know which ones you're going to use over the next 2 to 3 weeks. You can use six bench spots, pick up one guy for Monday to Thursday and one guy for Friday, Sunday in an FBC league. And you can pretty much cover any player that isn't inside the top 40 or 50. Those guys are hard to replace, but everyone else just streaming. In last week, Jorge Mateo, he had three lefties in the first half of the week. I picked him up for got 2 steals. I mean, he's useless otherwise, but just in the short period of time, a bunch of guys like that you can pick up, especially in that FBC with the half weeks.
I cut 5 players in my Vegas main event last week and added 5 players, obviously, for just $1. Kind of to your point right there, a corner infielder, a middle infielder, a guy with multi-position eligibility. And then I added Fuji and Robert Stevenson in case I didn't like a starting pitcher matchup or, you know, somebody randomly is day-to-day or lands on the IL. You kind of throw in one of those HLR guys that have elite metrics. So, back to Jose Siri real quick in the Tampa Bay Rays. Harold Ramirez, does he get a slight uptick in playing time? It's been really frustrating for fantasy managers as he's in the lineup and he produces and then, you know, and then he sits the next day. And then the other guy would be Manuel Margot, should be back soon from elbow surgery. Hopefully I wouldn't be adding him until he is back. So Harold Ramirez, do you have any interest in him? And do you think he gets an uptick in PT?
In most of my leagues, I need power and speed. So he isn't my guy. If you need batting average, I think he could be, from what I saw on series off days, they've been using Luke Raley in center field. I don't see that they used anyone else in center field over the last, month at least. Oh yeah, Josh Lowe played a little bit of center field, but I do think Raley plays mostly center field. And that kind of opens up the DH spot a little bit more for Harold. Vidal Prohan probably plays a little bit in right field as well. They'll mix things up through the Rays. I think I saw Margot is starting rehab, I believe today. So, but he's been out for a bit. So for the rest of the week, it's probably going to be a mix of Brujan, really, Harold. For next week, you'll add Margo into that mix. So it could get a little messy. I'm not sure any of them are going to be worth rostering for the full week. Harold plays against all lefties. So if they get more lefties, if they get something like 3 or 4 lefties next week, I haven't looked at the schedule, but I think I need something like that to make it worth picking him up for next week.
Yeah, and I noticed there's quite a few teams only getting 6 games the next couple of weeks, so be sure to capitalize on a full schedule and looking at platoon splits. Moving on to the Chicago Cubs and Jaimer Candelario. He's not in the starting lineup last night in Colorado due to back tightness. It's always a bummer when you see somebody get, you know, not in the starting lineup to begin the week at Coors Field. It's just such a bummer, but there's got to be, you know, you got to proceed with caution moving forward. This could potentially end up as an IL stint. If you don't see him in the lineup by the end of the week and they haven't put him on the IL, I'm still probably going to cut him just because back issues and spasms are so hard to predict. We saw that recently with Brandon Belt. He was having back spasms and then I think had the flu or something like that, some sort of illness. And then he was in the starting lineup last night, had 2 plate appearances, and then was pulled again for back spasm. So I would assume that this time he goes on the IL, and we could see something similar with Jaimer Candelario. So I would just tread with caution moving forward with him. He's been pretty damn good since being acquired by the Cubs. There's got to be an increase for playing time. I think that goes to Patrick Wisdom and Nick Madrigal. Is there anybody else that could perk your interest from the Cubs offense?
I think Pete Carr-Armstrong is the one that could get impacted by this. We didn't see it last night against the lefty. Maybe it's just this first game they used him as a pinch runner. But I do think if they choose to move Bellinger to first base full time to replace Candelario, and use PCA in center field, maybe mix with Talkman. Morales seems to only play against lefties. So however they decide to move things. If Candelario is out and Morel only plays against lefties, then that extra spot could go to the PCA against righties. Then against lefties, they use Morel, they use Wisdom, like you said. So it's keeping on it for the rest of the week. It's tough at this time of year. I mean, last night the Rockies thing was complicated as well. We're just getting no updates on these guys because they don't have to make, I don't know if the beat writers have checked out or just because they're not getting updates from the team because they don't have to make any IL moves because the expanded rosters. But like Brandon Rogers has sat 3 games in a row. There's no update on it. We have no idea what's going on. I don't think they're benching him because they're playing Alan Trejo and Harold Castro in his spot. Same thing with Doi. He sat Friday, Saturday, Sunday. No update. And then I heard in the broadcast, they apparently mentioned he was dealing with a hamstring. But on Sunday, I couldn't find any update about him. He came back last night. So just keep an eye on that. Even with the Yankees, the Oswald Peraza kid, it took 48 hours to get an update. We just saw he sat Sunday, I believe, and then he was out of the lineup yesterday, and then the news came out later. So a lot of things like that. Usually if a guy's sitting, it was a regular and he sits 2 games in a row, unless he's gone like 0 for 20 or something like that, it usually means there's something a little fishy there. just yeah,
the Peraza one was really frustrating. I added him because I needed a third baseman to fill in for Jorge Polanco, who's on bereavement. So I was like, I need somebody for 4 days. They play four games. Sign me up. He could get me a stolen base. Didn't get any updates from the team on Sunday or Monday morning. Nothing until Monday, until the lineup comes out. And then it's like, oh, okay. He's dealing with knee inflammation. So he's probably going to end up on the IL. If that, you know, fluid doesn't go down. Yeah. So the teams, man, the reporters not doing that great of a job this time of year, which doesn't help us. And you know that I know nothing about prospects. So you tell me about this guy on the Cubs, Pete Crow Armstrong. And I go, who the fuck is this guy? I start to look him up and he seems like he's pretty fucking good. So through the AA and AAA, he has 20 home runs combined and 37 stolen bases. And then if you put together one, you know, it's around a 280 average. So pretty good there, I would say. There could be strikeout concerns, but we have that with most rookies. So, yeah, when I hear the rookie name get called, I'm like, who is this? Type, look at Fangraphs and try and figure it out as quickly as possible, because I just don't pay attention to it as much as I should, maybe. I don't know. I've been given some shit from FTN subscribers before for not being up to par on, like, Dynasty or prospects. I'm like, I'm sorry, it's just really not the game I play until I know that they're coming up. So I'll be keeping my eyes and ears on Pete Crow Armstrong moving forward, since he was called up and activated yesterday.
I didn't know much about it, but I just read he's amazing defensively and he's a lefty. So I wonder if they're just getting rid of Tauchman, or the Tauchman experience is mostly over. Maybe they move him to DH again. Maybe some type of platoon at the age with Morelli and Tauchman. So many options, but we'll know by the end of the week for Sunday. And but in daily leagues, pick up Pete Crow Armstrong and see what happens.
Yeah, the Tauchman era could be coming to a close soon. Over the last 14 days, he has a 216 average with 10 strikeouts and 37 at-bats with no home runs. That's not great if you're going to be using him as the leadoff hitter on a team that is contending for the playoffs. So we could potentially see David Ross, the manager of the Cubs, mix some things up soon. You talked about Chris Bryant being activated. That's going to screw with people who were adding Montero and who was it, Goodman, et cetera, yeah. Right? We thought that we were getting a full seven game of Coors with all these hitters. And then lo and behold, Chris Bryant wants to end his vacation that he was on. He actually broke broken finger this time. So there is actually some validity to him missing time. But I swear sometimes that guy on the Rockies this year is like, I hear Aspen's nice this time of year. Be back in 2 weeks, 3 weeks or whatever. Here we have one slight news of that would be on the good side of things. The only one, actually, and that's Jared Kelenic. Returns from the IL from the fractured foot. Who loses playing time? They demoted, was it Marlowe yesterday?
Yeah. It looks like there's, and I thought it was interesting, they played him against the lefty his first game back. Before he got hurt, he was somewhat platooning with Dylan Moore. But now Dylan Moore looks like to be getting his platoon time with Joshua Huss at second base. So maybe that means Kelenic plays every day. If that happens, then there's one spot left for Mike Ford and for Canzone against righties. Mike guesses it goes to Ford. He's been better recently. But we know with Ford, he could go over 20 and then it goes back to Canzone. But based on that, I think Canzone's an easy drop. And then for Ford, you can decide Sunday what to do.
Speaking of Josh Rojas, he started to have an increase in playing time about a month ago. And he was doing pretty well, but he's sort of trending towards that Tauchman path. The batting average isn't as bad at 240, but in terms of getting inside the box and getting playing time, the reps, he's pretty low on the list. Looking at 25 at-bats over the last 2 weeks, you can compare that to the guys that are in the lineup every day, and that's 50-plus plate appearances. So his playing time has sort of dried up as well. I would likely be cutting him if you're still holding on to him, as he isn't an everyday player anymore. We're going to get into a starting pitcher and we're going to kind of dissect them a little bit. And then we're going to predict where we think he's going to go in drafts. If this was the first half of the season and we were talking during the All-Star break, like we were hanging out in Toronto, we would probably have guessed Jesus Luzardo's the top 4 or 5 round pick, maybe even third round from just from the first half.
Yeah.
I'll go over those numbers real quick. 3.29 ERA, 3.44 Sierra. That was ranked 8th. His whip was at 1.13. The K minus BB was 23%, which was 5th among all starting pitchers. His CSW was also ranked 5th at 30.8%. And the swinging strike rate was at 14.4%, which ranked 6th of all qualified starting pitchers. So if we're just looking at that and we say, all right, where are we drafting this guy? What would you say that those kind of metrics and the back of the baseball stats, the roto stats that you and I play for, strikeouts, ERA, whip, wins, where would you have said, just predicting, not that you're in or out, that kind of first half stat line gets drafted in 2024?
I mean, just that stat line, I probably would have said
second round.
Yeah. No, probably 3-4 turn. Just because the team context kind of keeping it down a little bit. Yeah, somewhere around there. But I think part of it is the like backing up the 100 innings from last year with the 3.11 xFIP, 3.32 ERA. So it would have been maybe 180, 200 innings of that, which very impressive. Still on the Marlins, so keeping the price down a little bit. But yeah, somewhere, yeah, probably late third would have been my guess. But now that's changed.
And he pitched the impressive stat for me is the 109.1 innings pitched in the first half is pretty good, you know, for somebody that wasn't as efficient and did have previous injury history. That right there is, we'll call that the green highlight on our sheet that you like to do. Let's now look into the second half. 4.94 ERA, ranked 68th among starting pitchers. 4.31 Sierra, ranked 48th. The whip is at 1.51, ranking 77th. K-minus BB is at 15%, which ranks 36th. The CSW rate is at 27.4%, which is ranked 25th. And the swinging strike rate is down to 12.7%, ranking at 21. So now we have the full profile of the year. Last night, I don't think it was last night. It didn't go too so well.
Yeah.
Now we have the full body of work here, and we only have a couple weeks left. So he's got, you know, 2 to 3 starts remaining or whatever it may be, maybe 4. Now knowing what we know or seeing the both bodies of work, we've seen 160.1 innings pitched, which is a 60 inning pitched spike from last season, which is awesome to see from a starting pitcher. Now we could maybe comfortably, health aside, potentially predict him to be a workhorse next season. That's on the positive side of things for him, but we are seeing regression and we're seeing it heavily. You and I thought that we would see some sort of regression like that. Maybe not to that extremity with Zach Gallen. Haven't gotten that full regression just yet. But what are your current thoughts going into the winter on somebody like Jesus Luzardo, seeing the good side and the bad side?
So last year he went at 118, and he's going to pitch more innings, but his numbers don't look as good. I was trying to find a comp from last year, and I just couldn't. I couldn't find anyone who struggled so much. The one name that kind of came to mind is Nathan Eovaldi, just because Eovaldi was really good in the first half last year, had a decent track record, more so than Luzardo, but not as good as peak Luzardo was last and earlier this year. And then the velo dropped in the second half. He was really bad. There were some injury concerns, which I don't think there are with Luzardo right now. But if he has like 3 more starts like this, and his ERA climbs up above 4, I'd have to think that's still a decent comp. Eovaldi went 133 last year. So maybe because of the upside, someone takes the chance, maybe around 160. I don't know. What do you think? I had a tough time with this one.
I could see him being maybe his price regardless of predicting where it is, potentially when we start doing our DCs this winter, I think it could be palatable. And then moving forward, if we, you know, all starting pitchers, they all get pushed up, right? We all fucking say that with the NFBC. We've beaten a dead horse on that, but he could potentially be one of those guys. Slight uptick in velocity. He's mixing this up. He's added this. He's young. Look what he did in the first half, et cetera. Look at the full season of work. You could start to see the narrative where he does become one of the helium guys, and potentially the helium could become too rich for my liking. So yeah, I'm having a hard time with him as well. And that's kind of why I wanted to use him as the example.
For what it's worth, though, I just looked it up. His last three starts, his velo has been down about a mile an hour, or at least about half a mile an hour. And two starts ago, and then last start, he was down at 95.8. And most of you, he was at 96.8, 97, 97.2, and so on. So that 95.8 keeps going for the last three starts. I think Uvalde might end up being a decent comp. Maybe the kind of guy that people look at the overall body of the work, and he goes earlier than he should early in draft season, and people start digging into him and sees something's wrong here, lower velo, bad results in second half, and he starts slipping.
You're sort of seeing the inverse of what I'm
I think, as you said, like eventually if we see him healthy in spring, and like you said, with main events going up and all that, price of starting pitchers going up, then it could go back up. But I do think he's the kind of pitcher. I mean, what you said, like the back of baseball card stats. I think when people start drafting, that's what we look at. And then when we dig deeper, we kind of notice the bad second half, things like that. So especially if there's people drafting that kind of checked out a month ago, you might just remember what happened earlier in the year. Then again, I say this, but his velo could be back up to next start, and he could pitch a gem, and his price goes back up. So it's weird how we're so influenced, even when we're drafting the offseason, we're influenced by very little things. And even if we just look back at the you mentioned earlier, the DC draft that they did, the seven rounds, they did that about a month ago. If we look back at that, we're drafting today, the ADP is completely different. Trey Turner's gone on a tear. I think he probably moves up. He went late first round. I think he's probably back in the middle of the first round. Just things change so quickly. They probably shouldn't change that quickly because we're paying attention too much to small samples, but it's just human nature.
Yeah. So the Marlins are right on the fence here. They are the fourth spot. So three spots get the NL wild card. And it's the Phillies, Cubs, and Diamondbacks. And the Marlins are right behind the Diamondbacks at 1.5 games back. We've seen guys with velo dips. There's kind of two tales of the story most of the time. It's either, oh, he's kind of nursing something, and that comes out, and then, you know, then there could potentially be an injury that occurs, and then he's day-to-day or on the IL. Or sometimes it could be, like we mentioned, the 60-inning increase for Luzardo. He's at 160. It could just be just pure fatigue. It'll be interesting to see. I feel like the Marlins should be paying attention to this velo dip as well, and maybe push the guy back a day or two. We've seen that in the past with Nate Eovaldi. We're seeing it currently with Chris Sale as well. Sometimes it's just fatigue, and they just need an extra day or two. So maybe, just maybe, they do that with Jesus Luzardo to end the season. You want to talk about anything else?
No, I don't think so. Nothing really comes to mind. It's a grind. 3 weeks to go. Kind of looking for it to the end of this.
Fuck, I hear you. I'm so, like, I'm feeble. I'm wilted.
I'm doing football on the side, but not nearly as involved in it as you are. So I can't imagine having to do both sports, but just doing full baseball is a grind. It's the stress. Have one league that's really close, worth for a lot of money, and wake up in the middle of the night, check box scores, wake up in the morning, I think about it, I start thinking about Fab on a Tuesday, start planning, looking at if the postponed game from yesterday is going to affect Dylan Cease's matchups going forward. Just little things like that, that just, it's a grind, plays with my mind. I'm always thinking about that. I think my wife's kind of looking forward to this ending as well. She says, "You're not there, Phil. I know you're thinking about, you're not here with us." Like, mm-hmm. I know. It's just a lot of money. It's 3 weeks left. We're going to get a nice vacation out of this, but you just have to give me, if I need an extra hour for Fab on Sunday, I need it. It'll be worth it. Don't worry.
You and I both go to bed early. We get up early. I do the whole middle of the night thing, and it's usually to see if like Camilo Duvall has gotten a save. That's like my that's my midnight wake up, go to the restroom, and you know, check to see what happened on the West Coast games now that I'm over here in Illinois.
Mine's for Mookie Betts home run.
There you go. Love that. He's the man. Well, as always, great to see you. I will be keeping in touch, obviously, as we talk about football and the rest of baseball season. Greatly appreciate you joining me today. This is Phil Dussault is my guest. You can follow him on Twitter at PhilDussault27. And to spell that, his last name is Dussault. I will be back next week, I think, maybe, or somebody else from FTN Fantasy. My co-host and colleague, Vlad Sedler, is currently out of the country on a work mission. So he is out there doing his thing, and I'm trying to fill the big guy's shoes. So thank you so much for listening. This is the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast. And if you haven't already, please subscribe, rate, and review. It goes a long way for us, and we greatly appreciate it. Until next time.